Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Sukha vipassiko mago. Agamago. T. I was looking for some frown on Ajahn Brahmadi's face. But I did actually make sukha. Vipassiko, the happy, not the pure vipassana, is a great path. I just decided today that I'm all these teachings I've been given for many, many years, I'm really a vipassana freak, an insight meditator. Because it's true, it's the understanding, the insight which you have, which gives you the jhanas, not sort of any effort, not any willpower, not any skill. It's the insight skill which is the very, very, very best. And to understand that, it means that we can use, instead of our willpower, instead of striving, instead of craving, instead of effort, instead of doing things, instead of looking at these things as attainments we have to achieve, for goodness sake, employ your wisdom. It's far more powerful. That's why I claim from today on to teach only insight meditation, pure insight meditation. It leads to jhanas and it leads to enlightenment. And just today, this is probably will be my favorite sutta. I said last week the Dhammacakka Sutta was number two. I think I said that. But the Anattalakkhana Sutta is probably number one, my favorite sutta. Remember, this was the sutta which gave the first arahats in the world, other than the Buddha, that was. It's an incredible, powerful sutta. And it's one of the great guides to meditation. You know, it all tells you that these five khandhas have nothing to do with you. You know, that you're out of control. You can't say to them, oh, may my body, may my feelings, may my perceptions, may my sankharas, including my will and all the other things which happen inside of me, my conscious, may it be like this and not like something else. You can't do that. So how many times you're sitting down in meditation, oh, may my mind become still. Oh, may my mind sort of get out of sloth and torpor. Oh, may my mind sort of be able to watch the breath. Oh, may my mind have the perception of the beautiful breath. Oh, may my mind perceive the nimitta. Oh, may my consciousness just disappear, only leaving my mental consciousness and get into jhana. Oh, may this happen. And has it happened yet for you? Why not? Because you can't do it, that's why. The Buddha said that in this Anattalakkhana Sutta. You cannot do that. It's impossible. He said, why? Because all these things don't belong to you. They're no self. So sometimes you look at what the Buddha said and you look at what you do and you realize big mistakes in the way you practice meditation and the way you live your life. You always try and control things. And that is a great delusion. That is a problem. The Buddha said you can't control these five khandhas. They don't belong to you. There's no one in here to really control it anyway. So how can you do anything? And what happens when you use that type of insight? You realize that it's a waste of time when you sit down and meditate thinking you're going to concentrate. You just stuff up your head, that's all. You just get stressed out and disappointed and frustrated. If you think you can concentrate, no way. If you can think you can still the mind, no way can you still the mind. You can't do these things. Why? Because it doesn't sort of bend to your will. Remember, when you try to bend the mind to your will, again, you just get frustrated. So whenever you meditate, you should never start thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to try for jhana, I'm going to try for nimitta, I'm going to try and watch the beautiful breath, I'm going to try and do this and try and do that. No. That sort of way is a way of just control. It can get you so far, but it usually gets you tense. It cannot take you all the way into the jhanas or into the liberations of the mind through insight of enlightenment experiences. You just can't do it that way. There's a fundamental mistake there. And that fundamental mistake is what stops most people getting deep meditation and getting enlightened. They think they can do it. So instead of doing that, you look at something like the beautiful Anattalakkhana Sutta. It is saying that you can't bend these five khandhas to your will. You can't make them do things. So what's the alternative? The alternative is if you just let them be. Leave them alone. You give up trying. You give up that will. You let go. You make peace with things. I can't do anything about this. It's all cause and effect. What I'm experiencing now is a result of old karma. It's here. My job now is to leave it alone, not try and bend this to be something different. If I feel tired, I just got to bear with it. Because if I try and do anything and say, oh, may I not be tired, you're just making more problems for the future. You're stopping jhana's enlightenment happening. If you're restless and you say, oh, may I not be restless, look what it said in the Anuttalakkhana Sutta. You can't do that. That restlessness, those thoughts, feelings, whatever's going on in your head, that doesn't belong to you. Oh, may my restlessness stop. Oh, may I not be restless. That actually causes the restlessness. It's not Dharma. It's not the path. It's against the teachings of the Buddha. It's bad karma. So when you struggle like that, you're creating bad karma, and that is the cause for restlessness in the future. And that's where your present restlessness came from. It's a result of bad karma, what I call bad meditation karma. You've been struggling, you've been striving, you've been fighting, you've been trying to control that which is uncontrollable. So now you're faced with restlessness, with tiredness, with pain, with dullness, with yuckiness, whatever you experience in your meditation. I experience the same. Sometimes when I meditate, I'm yucky. So what do I do with my yuckiness? You all know what I do with my yuckiness. I've told you many times. I make peace, be kind, be gentle with it. Just my yuckiness, it's because of all that stuff which people have dumped on top of me after the meal, all this counselling and stuff which people dump on top of me. And it's just all the busyness which sometimes you have to do. That's that yuckiness. It's just a bit of tiredness, that's all. Physical disturbance because I can't get up and do what I need to do. I can't exercise. I can't go to the toilet. I've just got to sit there for a while. So all that yuckiness, I just make peace with it. Be kind, be gentle. And because I'm not making any more bad karma, I'm not trying to control it, I just realize this yuckiness, it's not me, not mine, not a self. I can't do anything about it except just let it go. It's nothing about me, so I just totally abandon. I don't actually even abandon, I don't do anything, because sometimes this is the tricky thing with anatta. When you really look at it and understand it and internalize it and have it very, very strong, you know, it's automatic. You don't do anything. It's just automatic. You just watch these things. Because you know that they don't belong to you. They don't bend to any will. So it's just a waste of time having any will. It just causes more bad karma. So just totally let go. And when you don't aim for things, when you don't try and get rid of things, when you just make peace with things, you're just there with things. That is when, you know, you understand anatta and you use that insight in your meditation. That is when the problems disappear by themselves. When you get involved, you just make more problems. You just stand aside, you disappear, you vanish, you realize you can't do anything, you give up trying, you give up hoping, you give up everything. Then you're making good meditation karma. You're following the teachings of the Buddha. You're practicing according to the sutta we just chanted, the sutta of the Anuttalakkhana, the characteristics of no self. And when you practice according to that way, you realize you can't do anything, that whatever you do is just going to be counterproductive. It means you stop. You stop trying to control your body. I often notice that when I first saw people meditating for long periods of time, I thought, how on earth can anyone hold the body so still for such a long time? And sometimes when I started meditating, I tried to hold my body still, to try and see how long I could meditate for. And it just got more and more pain. And it took a long time to realize, look, I'm trying to hold my body still. The only way to keep my body still for hours is just to leave it alone, to let it go, not even to bother with it. And then it sits still for such a long time. And no problem at all. I try and make it sit still, it won't. I just stop interfering and it sits still all by itself. It teaches you a lesson. There's something interesting there. If I try and control my Vedana, I'll just have some peace and happiness and nice feeling. Get rid of the yucky feelings, the painful feelings, the unpleasant words which you hear from time to time and all this other stuff. I try and control that, it just gets worse. I just let it go, leave it alone. I wait and it becomes very pleasant. It's almost like counterintuitive. To get happiness, people think they have to make happiness. When they try making happiness, they just make suffering. If they stop trying to make happiness, happiness is just there. And it grows incredibly strong. This is what happens. If you try and attain things, you just get suffering. If you stop all this attaining business and stop trying to make things happen and change things, then happiness is there for you. Incredible, blissful, deep, powerful happiness. And just so still, lasts for hours. Same as all his perceptions. A lot of times, I think the Buddha said this somewhere, that meditation is just a training of perception. It's just messing around with your ability to perceive. So letting go of some perceptions so other more refined perceptions can come in. And of course, how do you do that? How can you perceive such a thing as a beautiful breath? You go looking for it, you'll never find it. You stop looking for it, and after a while, it just is there. And why are these things just there when you stop looking for them? It is because that these are the landmarks of stillness. This is just what happens when you do let go, when you make peace, you're kind, you're gentle, you do it long enough, this is just what happens. You don't try and get to these stages. You don't do anything, and these stages happen to you. In Frankfurt, in the retreats, over here in Bodhinyana, I've given many, many times a simile of Buddha air. Buddha air, as long as you get on the aircraft and you strap yourself in, then all these flight attendants, they come to you. They come to you. This is what happens to me because, you know, I travel a lot. I was sitting there on Thai Airways or Singapore Airlines or wherever else, Qantas. You're sitting there just minding your own business, and this flight attendant comes up to you and says, "Sir, you know, we have serving something now. Would you like first jhana?" And that's basically what it's like. They just come and give it to you. And you're sitting there and say, "Yeah, okay, I'll have some of that. Thank you very much." But if you go pressing the button and asking, "Can I have some first jhana?" No way. They get very angry at you, especially on Qantas. But if it's on... I can't avoid telling that story once. Now this is, I can tell you this, 36 years ago, traveling over to Thailand to become a monk from London. And of course, you know, just a poor old young man. So I got the cheapest possible ticket, which was on Aeroflot, the Soviet Union airline. That was really the bottom of the pile. The aircraft was okay, but this is no exaggeration. I can picture this lady to this day, the flight attendant. She was, I'm sure they did this. I'm sure they didn't get the beautiful young girls like they do these days in most airlines. They get these, you know, ex-Russian Olympic weightlifters and wrestlers. So they did look beautiful, but my God, they were very big, huge people. So you did mess around with them. So for me, just I was thirsty. I just wanted a cup of tea. I was an English man. So it was about a 4, 5, 6 hour flight, I forget how long. And so halfway along, you hadn't got anything to drink. I asked for a cup of tea. I could never, just as this big sort of Russian female gorilla walked past. And she looked at me. And she, you know, I can't... And the way she looked at me, just with total anger and disgust, and said, "Nyet!" And usually I knew what that word meant. It meant no. And I never asked anymore. I was too scared to ask. And that was amazing. Just they just wouldn't do anything for you. And, you know, it's just as far as the in-flight entertainment was concerned, they had this little pocket in front of you, and they had the magazines of the latest 5-year plan of hydroelectric dams. Really interesting stuff to read. Soviet Union. But anyway, that on Buddha air, they just give you these incredible things. And this is just what it's like to meditate. You just sit down and shut up and do nothing. And these states of meditation are what happens when you practice anatta, non-self. Look, there's no one in here. Buddha said this again and again. So look, who's trying to attain something? What's trying to attain it? It's just not Dhamma to do that. It's not following the teachings of the Buddha. Now, if you do get something, who's actually getting this? It's not an attainment. It's just a sign that your sense of self is disappearing. That's all this meditation is. It's just a signpost that you're vanishing. And the more you vanish, the deeper you go. And that's as simple as it is. Which is why that when you start doing this letting go, you do get nibbida. Nibbida to just wanting things. Nibbida is just repel from it. This is just stupid. I'm repelled from all this yuckiness, this pain, this frustration, this wanting and not getting, and just being tricked, thinking that if I follow these desires, I'm going to get some happiness. If I have my cup of tea, and then it's going to make me happy, or the coffee, or whatever it is. I mean, you've been around long enough, each one of you, traveling here, traveling there, trying to get this, trying to get that, and it's just so frustrating, samsara. You never get what you want. Sometimes you almost do, but it's not quite good enough, and that is really worse than anything else. And so you do all of this for such a long time, and you think, look, what's going wrong? And in the end, you come across these Buddha's teachings, and you say, look, I've been striving, that's the problem. I've been trying to make things happen. And every time I do, even in a monastery, I try and make things happen, it just gets worse. And now and again, you get a moment of clarity. I'm just going to give up. Let go. Don't do anything. Remember the Buddha's teachings. You can't bend these five khandhas. You can't bend samsara. I'm supposed to be the boss of a monastery. You can't bend a monastery to your will. I can't bend any of you. I can't even bend the cat to my will. It won't do what I tell it. Sometimes I talk to it. Probably thinks I'm crazy. No way will the cat do what I want. Same with all the other khandhas. Just like my body is like a cat. It won't do what my vedana, my sanya, sankara, my vijnana. It just won't do. It just follows its own nature. So what I do is just understand that I start my meditation just reflecting on anatta. That's what I did this afternoon, because I knew we were going to chant the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. It was in my mind. Just sitting there. So look, there's no one in here. So nothing to do. There's no one to do anything. If I get jhanas, fine. If you don't, fine. No, it doesn't belong to anybody. It's not a thing. I'm not trying to attain anything. Because there's nothing to attain, there's no one actually to hold on to these attainments. You start practicing like that, and just it's so easy. You just get peaceful. Because you're not wanting things, you're not stirring up the mind, everything settles down. Just like the glass of water. When you don't hold it, you just put it down, you don't interfere with it, you don't poke your finger in it, it just settles down, becomes perfectly still. And there are signs of stillness. The landmarks of stillness. This is just what happens. Just the breath is just there, beautiful. There's nothing so beautiful as a breath when you don't look for it. If you try and search for a beautiful breath, you do all this stuff, okay, I've got to find the breath. Okay, sit down, focus on the breath. Breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in one, breathing out two, all this stuff. All this trying stuff. Yeah, it just maybe gets rid of the worst defilements, but look. The much better way, but you've got to do it 100%, okay, do it properly, is just sit down there and do absolutely nothing. Why? Because there's no one in here to do anything anyway. I'm just thinking of the Buddha's teachings. I can't bend anything to my will. So what's the point of this will if it doesn't work? What's the point of trying if I won't achieve anything? What's the point of even hoping for a jhana, when all that hope is just another extension of the stupid will, the craving? There's no one in here. There's nothing which belongs to me. Because there's no owner in here. So you do that and you just totally abandon. And when you totally abandon, the very cause for samsara is just cut off. It's like taking out the plug, of the refrigerator. It's just turning off the gas from the car. Just things don't work. They slow down and they stop. And it's actually seeing the cause, seeing the fuel. So that's actually what we should do in our meditation. What keeps this mind going crazy? What stops it being still? What is What is that fuel which keeps the mind moving around again and again and again so we don't experience these beautiful states of meditation? So we use the insight to find out what that fuel is. What is the cause of all of this? And once you find out what that cause is, it's a stupidity which thinks you can control things. It's a stupidity of thinking that you own things. A stupidity of thinking that there's an achievement for you to get during this retreat. I don't know if any of you came here with great goals, what you wanted to get, what you wanted to achieve. You know, some of you have given up 3 months of your life. Some of you have given up all of your life by becoming monks. Are you still trying to get something out of this monastic life? Trying to be like a Pali scholar, an author, an abbot, a great meditator, a great joker? What are you trying to be? Sometimes when you look at that, you think, just dummy, now I know where I'm going wrong. In a monastery, what we're supposed to be doing is disappearing, vanishing. What do we mean by disappearing, vanishing? I mean getting this beautiful thing of letting go. And being able to sit still and not do anything, not go anywhere, not try and attain anything. Just to realize, or just even through faith, realize anatta, non-self. There is no bending of the 5 khandhas. They go according to cause and conditions, karma. So I'm not going to bend anything. I'm not going to change anything. I'm just going to make peace, be kind, be gentle. That's all. That means doing nothing. You do things like that and the mind is totally empty of will, totally empty of craving, totally empty of this interfering thing. And once you stop that interfering thing, which is the cause of agitation in the mind, there's no alternative. The mind just gets slow and stops and gets still. And that's why that these are just stages which you go through, not stages you try and get to. You try and get to them, and they're too far from you. You just stop trying to get anywhere and just be where you are. Then these things just develop. Just like, you know, the flower just opens up when it blooms and you can see inside of it. Just like the tree when it's ripe, just puts forth its blossoms. It's just what happens according to nature. I know there's an old story in my English folklore of King Canute trying to turn the tide back. He couldn't do that. That was an example of somebody who's actually trying to meditate. And you just get frustrated. You think sometimes a King Canute, because he was a king, a great sort of, he was a Viking, wasn't he, or a Dane or something. He was one of those people, a relation of Ajahn Bhamali. But anyway, he was really stupid and he made a fool of himself. I think actually the story was different than I really heard when I was at primary school. But anyway, he made a fool of himself. He was trying to control things. And sometimes each one of you make fools of yourself when you try and control your mind in meditation. So don't do Canute meditation. So do sort of Buddha meditation. Just sit there. And that's it. Nothing more. Just sit there. Don't try and bend anything. Just be at peace, kind, gentle with what's happening. When you do things like that, because you're not bending anything, of course, there's no interference there. There's no reason to propel you off into the past or the future. There's no reason for this thing called thinking and giving things name and working it all out. To work things out takes effort. To think takes craving. It means to do something. I don't know what you're thinking for. I thought for most of my life, a lot of my life, haven't got me very far at all. Just gets you crazy. Just makes you sort of put something down on a piece of paper and then somebody argues about what you wrote. So if no one can argue with silence, they can argue with thoughts. So after a while, we prefer silence, peace, stillness. The greatest Dharma is what's written on an empty page, not a full page. So stillness, emptiness, nothing there. Gone, finished, poof. And this is what happens, you're just in the present moment. Not because you force yourself, it's just part of the progression. And then this wonderful breath appears. And it's, I spent a lot of my early years looking for my breath. Looking here, looking there, sometimes you find it, then it goes again. That was a big mistake. So now I just sit there and just remember anatta. It's nothing to do with me. I can't bend my will. This breath comes, it comes. It doesn't come. And then when it does come, it's just so beautiful and peaceful and nice and lovely and still. It doesn't go anywhere. It just stays. And it's just so nice being able to meditate. Just sitting there with this beautiful breath coming in, beautiful breath going out, seeing, watching every breath, totally peaceful, no effort at all, just sitting there, just having a great time, just even that degree of meditation. And you've got to be very careful, because sometimes people think, wow, now I'm here, now let's go the rest of the way, let's get nimitta. And you try and bend your meditation again, forgetting your insight that, no, this is nothing to do with you, you can't make it happen. If it really was the self there, then you can bend the meditation to suit you. But there is no self in there, therefore you cannot bend your meditation at all. If you do bend it, you're just going backwards. So you don't do anything, you don't try. Remember this, if I get jhana, if I don't get jhana, it's all the same, there's no one who attains it anyway. Just who wants it anyway? There's no one here to want anything. You get it, you don't get it, who's got it? It just comes, it goes, what's the point? So you totally abandon everything, every desire, every craving, under the great insight of anatta, non-self, no one in here, I don't own anything, I don't possess anything. All this idea of possessing is a total delusion. If I die, I have to leave it all alone. Even before I die, somebody will take it. Even right now, I see all this stuff fading away and wearing out, all this stuff which I thought I owned is now sort of disappearing. Sometimes I have things and I lose them. I don't really lose them because I never had them to begin with. All this stuff which we have, physical possessions, mental possessions, spiritual possessions, throw the whole lot away. You don't own anything. Why don't you own anything? Because there's no one in there to do the owning. There's not a being in there, not a person in there. So even just believe that out of faith for a little while. Just have that perception. Just manufacture that just for a little while. No, but do it 100% and then see what happens. Meditation gets so simple and easy. You're just sitting there and just this beautiful breath, you just don't want to go anywhere. And of course, because you don't want to go anywhere, because you're totally content, you're not trying to be content, you are content because there's no other choice. It means that just the whole thing just develops. Just the breath, after a while, just vanishes. That's just its nature. You just go deeper in and get this beautiful nimitta. And you think, wow, here they are again. It's beautiful, beautiful nimittas. I didn't do this. It's not my achievement. This is just what happens when I stop trying to achieve things. This is just the flight attendant comes up to you again and says, here's a nimitta. And you don't even actually even ask for it. It just puts it right in front of you, whether you like it or not. And there it is. Just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful states of meditation. And as you do these things, it's not just for the sake of having a great meditation so you can tell all your friends, you feel good about yourself. Wow, look, I've got nimitta in this rains retreat. Look, shut up, don't do that sort of stuff. You don't deserve to feel that you've achieved something if you get nimitta. Insight should tell you that this is not an achievement. This is not something I can pat myself on the back. This is not a medal which I wear. This is just shows I'm getting rid of all this medal business. It shows I'm understanding just the illusion of achievement. I'm realizing that I'm actually just going in the opposite direction from craving and amassing spiritual attainments. I'm just letting go, I'm vanishing. And I vanish that much that I can experience these nimittas. It's a state of vanishing. And what I'm saying is vanishing is your vanishing. The owner, the controller, the possessor, the bender, the will, the maker, the creator, all that stuff which belongs to the world of Mara. Mara, the one who wields power, the control freak in chief, I've called him before. And here you're just going beyond Mara, beyond the influencer, the creator, the deceiver. You're going beyond that. And this is why Mara gets really shit scared when people get nimittas and jhanas. Going way beyond the control of a will. And it's so peaceful. And just even getting to those sorts of states, you know, you reflect, you see what's going on, and the insight comes to you. Look, this only happens when I really disappear. When this thing which has been controlling my whole life, which has been running the show, which has been making me do things, worrying about what people say about me, worrying what I think about myself, all this praise and blame business, all this striving and creating and making things happen and working and building and all this sort of stuff. The house builder, you have been seen, said the Buddha. Your rafters have been broken. No more will you build any more houses for me. It's a beautiful little saying of the Buddha, it's a beautiful simile. You're starting to see that house builder. And when you sort of quell that house builder for a little while, all these beautiful states happen. So you're seeing from your experience, so your insight is developing. As you let go more and more, you're getting closer to nirvana, you're getting closer to bliss, you're getting closer to stillness. And there's always something very, very holy just about even nimittas. And when these beautiful lights appear in the mind, they're powerful, they're blissful, but they're just so selfless. You feel that way. They're just subtle. They're just rich in spirituality. They give you the biggest meaning. You can sense that this is more important than the Tripitaka. And this is where the Tripitaka comes from. This is where all those Dhamma teachings come from. You're experiencing them now. You're going to these places. And this is just nimitta. And just leave it. You're just so happy that you got that far. And it's just powerful. It's blissful. It's just full of insights. It's just like those nimittas, like gold, like a gold mine, a rich vein where you get so many understandings about the nature of the mind, the nature of the body, but more importantly, the nature of the will and the choice and the doing and the controlling and just how counterproductive that is. Always promises. Promises like a politician at election time to give you all the things you ever want. But then, after the election, you know, when the will has done its job, you're always disappointed. That's called the suffering of life. When you go in this opposite direction, just being at peace, being still, being kind, being peaceful, being gentle, when you go in that direction, you're actually practicing anatta. No one in here. You're just this total sense of emptiness. You're just like a screen on which all these things are just playing out. But you're not making them happen. And this screen isn't you. It's just nature just doing its thing. And you're just part of the show. You're not even sitting in the seats watching all of this. It's just a show with no audience. And as you're watching this go on, just it gets more and more blissful, more and more peaceful. And you realize that you just have to continue just doing absolutely nothing. And after a while you get the hang of just allowing things to happen. Another sort of way which helps you do nothing is realizing, this is a classic meditation teaching which I give on retreats, that the next stage is always in the middle of where you are now. I love that little metaphor because it reminds me I don't have to do anything. I don't have to go on to the next stage. Stay where you are, Ajahn Brahm. Don't do anything. Just enjoy because it will develop by itself. Just, you know, the flowers within the bud. Now the pollen, the sweet part, is right in the middle of the flower. So all we need to do is just nothing. Stay, wait, patient, in the moment. And enjoy every moment of this. That's why it's sukha vipassika. Because it's a happy insight. And as you really develop insight, it develops more happiness. And more happiness, a stronger mind, more insight into just the nature of what happens when you practice anatta. Just, you don't do anything. You don't try and bend things. You realize all of this, five khandhas, is beyond your control.
So you just leave it alone. A lot of times that leaving alone by itself is an end of suffering. You know how many times you have to strive and control and do things and make things? How many times, you know, when you were young, you were told to do this and you were told to do that? You know, when you were at school, given this homework, asked questions, and people were always forcing you, making you do things. And then later on, you try and make yourself do things. You self-motivate yourself, you self-discipline yourself, and you struggle and you strive and you work so hard. Aren't you tired of that? And after a while, you get out of that habit. You stop striving. You just really rest and let go. And realize that all you've ever been doing is going away from home. Your whole life has just been this journey away, out. We call those the asavas, the outflowings. And you've been like this prodigal son, just traveling from place to place, traveling from monastery to monastery, experience to experience, life to life, always traveling outside of home. And someone just invites you back home. And in home you don't do anything, you just sit down there and nothing happens. For some people they don't like that place until they realize just how tiring it is to be traveling, to be told to do things, to be moving on, creating more things, always doing work. It is a 24-hour job for 365 days a year. I'm talking about that inner work which we do. And somebody tells us, no, come on, come in, come inside the home, sit down, rest, do nothing, and disappear. When we're not working, we're not doing things, it's like we don't exist. Most people are known by what they do. The carpenter, the philosopher, the academic, the monk. What does a monk do? Nothing. That's what a monk should be doing, nothing. I don't know, there's a few people here who haven't heard my old jokes. This is one of my favourite monk jokes about this guy who rings up a monk and said, can you come and do this service for me today? And the monk says, sorry, I'm busy. And the caller says, what are you doing, monk? Nothing. I'm busy. Okay, that's what monks are supposed to do, nothing, okay? So the caller thinks, okay, fair enough. Monks are supposed to do nothing. So he hangs up and he rings the monk the next day. Monk, can you come and do the service for me today now? And monk says, I'm busy. What are you doing today? Nothing. That's what you're doing yesterday. Yes, said the monk, but I'm not finished yet. That's a monk joke. And I love that joke because this is what we're supposed to be doing, nothing. This is our job. So if anyone asks you, what do for a living? Nothing, you just sit here and people come and bring food to you every day. What do you do for meditation? Nothing, I just sit here and people bring jhanas to me. Just like dana. It's great, isn't it, that people actually bring all this food, they bring it all this way, they cook it and they wash up afterwards and then they give a donation for the privilege of giving you food to eat. Just like jhanas. You just sit there and do nothing and the jhana comes to you and it makes you very blissed out and gives you all these insights as well. On top of it, all these donations of great wisdom. Brilliant, isn't it? And what do? You just sit here doing nothing. Right? Because it's total emptiness. There's no one in here. So just respect that emptiness. Respect that anatta. Just worship anatta. And when you respect and value that anatta, nothing to do. You sit there. And after a while, because you don't define yourself as an author, as a builder, as a cook, as an accountant or whatever else you think, or as a sick monk, a healthy monk, a strong monk, a funny monk, whatever you think type of monk you are. No, you're a no-hoper monk. That's what I am. I'm a no-hoper. No hope at all when I meditate. Just give up all hope and let go. I know that's what it said in Dante's Inferno. On the entrance to hell, give up hope, all ye he enter the here. That's not the inferno, that's jhanas.
give up all hope, all will, all ye who enter meditation. Because that's what you have to do. You have to give up all your will, all your hope, all your doing, all your craving, all your wanting. So, you know, they stole that sign from Jhana. So the real thing is just let go totally, 100%. And then you're just sitting there, just enjoying your nimitta, and just having fun, sukha and vipassana, just remembering the insight, no self, this is not mine, nothing to do with me, there's no one here, it's just nimitta, that's all. It's just part of life. It's amazing when you don't own things. When you don't own things, you don't mess them up. And as soon as you start to own this, it's my jhana. I've got jhana. Well, it's my, well, not jhana, you can't do that in jhana. My nimitta. I've got nimitta. I'm going to tell all my friends about nimitta. I'm going to tell my best mate in this monastery, hey, I've got nimitta today, just to upset them. And that sort of stuff, you can actually see that spoils everything. It spoils the purity, the beauty, the sacredness, if you like, of these beautiful states. So these are holy states. These are really powerful, uttari manusa dhamma. They're above all this worldly dhammas, the man dhammas of attainments and wanting and having and possessing and pride and telling everybody else what you've achieved. This is beyond all of that. That's why it's called uttari, beyond, manusa dhamma, all this worldly human stuff. So when we start getting into these states, they're far refined, they're gorgeous. And they're only refined and gorgeous to the extent we've disappeared. The more you are, the further you are from these things. They're just signposts, they are vanishing, well done. It's the rewards, it's the sweets for doing the job. And just anatta, if you ever get into a nimitta, just afterwards reflect, how on earth did that happen? You'll always find it's because you really did nothing. You really did disappear. It wasn't yours. You didn't do it. Don't own it. Don't take it as an achievement, an embellishment for your ego. It's totally opposite of that. And just that reflection should encourage you to go further by letting go of ego more. So you don't try and get these states. The whole job is to let go of the sense of self, to let go of the control. To stop, to renounce, to be kind. Loving kindness, the door of my heart is open to whatever happens. It's total letting go and total accepting, embracing of everything, even the ugly, even the painful. It's called letting go. It's making peace. You don't make peace with the nice people. You make peace with your enemies. You make peace with the enemy of your meditation. You make peace with the yuckiness, with the tiredness, with the dullness. You make peace with the restlessness. You make peace with enemies. And of course, if you make peace with enemies, how easy it is to make peace with friends. Actually, it's not easy to make peace with friends. Sometimes we tend to attach to friends and control our friends even more than our enemies. Just like if a nimitta becomes your friend, sometimes you tend to own it, control it, and try and keep it. You're just manipulating your friends. So if you try and do that, just nimitta goes as well. So look, just leave them all alone. So there's no ego left there at all, no self, no mind. And when you do that, it's no big deal. It's nimitta. It's brilliant, beautiful, holy, incredibly powerful, big deal. And I say that big deal shrugging my shoulders because that's a sign that you're not owning it. If you get excited, it means your self was there. Ah, it's my nimitta, I got the nimitta at last. All these times I've got to tell Ajahn Brahm, at last, after all these years, I've been practicing here, I've got a nimitta. Oh, come on, you've lost it. Just get out of the way, butt out. If you get afraid, what is fear anyway? It all comes from a sense of self, me, and I'm losing something, or something's being challenged. Fear is a perfect, absolute, clear sign that there's an ego and a self in there. What are you afraid of? You've got nothing to lose. These five khandhas, you've heard it before, they're not me, not mine, not the self. What have I got to lose? I own nothing. I'm perfectly free of possessions.
At least believe that in faith as a theory. So what have you got to lose? Absolutely nothing. Never had anything to begin with. Isn't that beautiful? To have nothing to lose and nothing to fear. You can go through anything and nothing will shake you. You don't own anything at all. Not of your physical possessions, not your mental possessions, not your body, not your mind, not your wisdom, no reputation. You've got nothing. You're just totally unable to be made afraid, because no one can take anything from you. There's nothing to take anymore. You've lost everything. You're the poorest of the poor, free, empty, fearless. Imagine that. Whatever happens in life, shrugging shoulders, no fear, nothing to lose, because I've lost everything already. I mean, really everything. Not outside, but inside as well. So when Nimitta comes up, nothing to lose. No fear, no excitement, just Nimitta, that's all. Brilliant, blissful, but when there's no self, there's no excitement, no fear. And of course, you know what happens next. Simply because you vanish, the jhanas come. That's why jhanas are a sign. A sign that you know what non-self really means. You know what letting go means. It's like you pass the test, the letting go test, the anatta test. It's a test of your real wisdom, of your insight. If you haven't had that insight, you can't get into jhanas. These are not states which you attain through your skill, through your will, through your persistence. They're states which you achieve because you know how to let go. Of course, sometimes people fluke it. And I know many people have done that. They just fluke a jhana. For one reason or another, they just totally give up. And they let go. And wow, it happens. And of course, they can never get back again. The reason is because they think, take it as an attainment, another great thing which they've achieved in their life. They own it. And they sort of try and get it back as a possession. They're following the wrong attitude. Our job is just not to try and get jhanas. That's not our aim. Our aim is just to let go. To see how much we can disappear. To see how much we can actualize the teachings of anatta. How we can actually put that into practice. How we can make the Buddha's teachings our attitude in meditation. So if we internalize those great teachings of the Buddha, the great sermons such as the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, we internalize it. It becomes us. It becomes, in a sense, that the way we meditate. It is the attitude, it's the force, it's the energy of meditation. It's just how it works. And of course, limiters are there. We don't own them, we don't control them. Therefore, they become still. They don't move. They don't go up and down, pulsate. They're just totally still. Why? Because no self to move it. Self there, and it will move. No self, and it'll be still. It just grows, grows. More and more blissful. So you go right inside. Now you're really flying. Jhana. Brilliant. Nice thing about jhanas is you can't have a self inside. Just this idea of like owning these things and possessing these things is totally alien to the experience. Which is one of the great things about it. It means, you know, that you're basically almost home. You are in a home, an inner home of stillness and peace and bliss. And there's no sense of self in there. You can't do things. You can't move. And of course, that's why they last for I don't know how many hours or whatever, minutes, depending on how much letting go you've gone into that state with. But these are signs of letting go, signs of selflessness, signs of emptiness. That's why whenever you ask Ajahn Chah, this great master, just teachings, always say, Wang, it's empty, it's nothing there, no mind me a lie. There is nothing. What he was talking about, it was no sense of self, nothing to possess. So these are not, these are states of possessionlessness and of unpossessiveness. And that's what it feels like in it. You don't own things. An ownerlessness state of meditation. And of course that just confirms the path by which you entered. You can't make these things happen. You don't own them. They're not possessions. They're just what happens when you disappear. They're just the gifts which are given to you when you don't ask for things. When you totally let go and be still and be free. And there's the greatest insight of all comes, that this is real freedom. The prison is wanting. The prison is craving. The prison is aspiring. Those are the bars and walls of your prison cell. And of course, it's just so hard to escape from that prison cell. You've been in there such a long time. And you take the aspiring, the craving, the wanting to be your way out of prison. You take the bars to be the escape. They're not the escape. So the escape comes when you just sit there and the bars vanish and the walls just evaporate and you find the prison, you're just in total freedom. Because around that prison cell there is freedom. It's just these bars and walls, they sort of tend to sort of imply you are in a prison. They make the prison cell. When they disappear, there's nothing between you and freedom. So this is why we learn how to let go of these things. We learn to let go, again, not through will. You can't will to let go, because that's oxymoron. If you're willing, you're not letting go. If you're letting go, you're not willing. So after a while, it gets this beautiful understanding of anatta. Heck, there is no Ajahn Brahm. There is no Ajahn Appi. There's no Ajahn Bhumali. Who's doing all of this? No one is. I'm going to stop doing all of this. I'm going to totally be still. That's why, in, I think it was a year or two ago, 2 years ago, I spent the whole retreat, 3 months range retreat, just on the principle from the Visuddhimagga. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. Enlightenment is, but no one enters it. It's a great poem. I know I really sort of trash the commentaries sometimes, but there's some really, really good stuff in those commentaries, and that's one of my favourite poems from the Visuddhimagga. Now, the great sort of whoever said that was, you know, really knew what they were talking about. That was a meditator speaking, probably enlightened. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. Do you get it? Are you travelling when you're meditating? Are you doing it? Are you driving the car? Are you giving directions? If you are, there is no path for you. You're travelling. You're getting somewhere. You've got a goal, something to achieve, a place to reach. That's called a traveller. There is no path for you. No wonder you get frustrated and nothing really happens on the retreat. Imagine what happens. The path is, but no traveller is seen. So your job is not trying to walk the path. Your job is to try and eradicate the traveller. You all know what I mean, the traveller. The doer, the maker, the creator. That thing inside of you, which is always causing you the problem. The will, the choice, the thinker, the changer. The hater, that's the thing we try and eradicate, suppress, stop. That's why sometimes the Buddha called this path. I was reading this the other day. He was saying just so few people would be able to, no, this was just after his enlightenment. He said, why should I teach? No one would understand this stuff called sabbasankhara samatha, to quietening down all the will, all the chaitanya. That's part of sankhara. Totally calming the sankharas, the creations, and the creator. People won't understand that. So he said, there's no much point in me teaching. But then Brahma's Hampati came down and said, look, a few people will. A few people haven't got dust in their eyes. They should be able to understand what it means of letting go of will and doing and making and striving and struggling and creating and making and doing. And few people will understand the calming of all creating. And of course, some people do understand. And they just try it. And they find, I can meditate. Or rather, meditation happens. They realize they are suppressing the traveler. Or rather, letting the traveler just vanish. And they're watching it disappear. And the more the traveler, you know, that you inside of you, that ego, that sense of self, as soon as that traveler vanishes, the path is just like this super highway. You just can't miss it. It's automatic. The path, present moment awareness, silence, beautiful breath, nimittas, jhanas, just it's wide. And so it's automatic. You just don't do anything. You just travel along this incredible, powerful, ancient path through the jungle to this city in the Buddha's great simile, discovering this ancient path which so many other arahats have walked down, and now you're walking down that path. You're letting go. Nimittas and jhanas are happening to you. That really is cool. You know, that you're going the way of the old arahats, the way the Buddha went. That really is inspiring. But you have to totally vanish. You get too inspired, you tend to think of that as an achievement. And that's where you sort of stuff up. The traveller disappears, and the path is an enlightenment. But no one who enters it, no person, it's not an attainment. It's a vanishing, a disappearing, a going, gone beyond being. This is what happens. So you just vanish and disappears. The jhanas teach you just the power of vanishing. And it's all done through insight. Insight into non-self. Insight into stillness. Insight into these five khandhas that have nothing to do with you. It's body, my pleasure and pain, my perceptions, the way I look at things. That's why we always argue. Because I see it one way, you see it another way. It's life, it always will be that way. You can't stop it. It's just perceptions, but that's why the Buddha said, I don't argue with the world. It's not. There's no one in there to argue anymore, just arguments, that's all. Perception has gone from being a sense of self. And the sankhara, all these other creations, the thoughts, the wills, all of that vanishing. It's not mine, don't belong. And consciousness itself, the knower, that's not me, not a self, not mine. It is not the essential me. So what happens? Consciousness vanishes, stops. Many people take the consciousness to be themselves, that's their person. That's what happens when you're just meditating. Your consciousness gets incredibly refined. It's like peeling an onion to see what's its essence. You keep peeling consciousness until there's nothing left. It's gone, finished. Actually, the simile of the onion, that was the simile which the Buddha used for the sankhara, for the will. There's nothing inside of it. It's just, not only it's nothing inside of it, but the will really makes you cry, like what happens when you peel an onion. Of course, you're so much suffering doing things and willing. You try really hard, and everybody really tries their best, but they just end up being pains in the ass. All of you. Because why? Because will is like that. That's its nature, creating samsara. So you see that even the consciousness disappears. Because the consciousness and the will, they go together. Sankhara supports consciousness, and consciousness supports will. The two of them just roll around together. It's interesting that, because when you will things, you actually create the world. You create consciousness. You create mind. And of course the mind, it wants to do more. So it wants. It does. But it keeps going on and on and on until you find the path of anatta, the great teaching of the Buddha. You just stop, you let go, you give up, vanish. And all this stuff, even consciousness, disappears. The person, disappears. It doesn't enter nibbana. When the person disappears, nibbana is. This is what happens. When you vanish totally, then everything's stopped. You understand just why, understanding a teaching like that, the Buddha said such things as kina jati. Rebirth is destroyed. I often actually reflected on that. How the heck did he know that rebirth is destroyed? Because he knew that's what stillness was. There's nothing there. Because there really is nothing there, there's nothing to actually to make any more rebirth. The Sankara, the creator, not creator outside of you, you are the creator, you know that. The creator has been stilled. Cannot create any more life, any more rebirth. Cannot happen. It's seen clearly. And then that person can claim to be arahat. Not that they are an arahat, but they say, this is my last life. It's brilliant the way the Buddha expressed that. He didn't say, I am an arahat. He just said, birth has been destroyed. This is the last life. It's a brilliant way of teaching and talking. It's authentic, because it shows that he's vanished and disappeared. Anatta was the key. That's why that second sermon is one of my favourite. It is the favourite, I would say. Some of those early teachings were the best. They came from the newly enlightened Buddha. The enlightenment just fresh, just raw, simple, direct teaching. It must have been incredibly powerful. It was powerful because those five monks came enlightened straight away. Brilliant. What a wonderful time that was. And as for us, many, many years later, we look at that, reflect upon it, until it becomes us. Becomes us in the sense that we remember that so clearly when we sit down, close our eyes, what the Buddha said. That if the body was ours, we'd be able to make it do this and do that. We can't, it's not ours, so leave it alone. Chuck it away. Vedana, always seeking for pleasure, trying to get rid of pain. You can't do anything with it. So just leave it alone. Just make peace with it. Yucky feelings, painful feelings, tired feelings, restless feelings. Just feelings, that's all. Way you perceive things. Leave it alone. Sankaras, leave them alone. Consciousness, leave it alone. You can't do anything with it anyway. So leave it totally alone. You do that, remember that, you find meditation is the easiest thing in the world. And you're walking in the path of a Buddha. You're confounding and blindfolding Mara, because Mara can't catch you anymore. It can only catch you when you're doing something. When you're doing absolutely nothing, Mara is gone. Try it. See if it works. It's good fun. Okay, it's the talk this evening.
Patipano.